evolution, creation. So how this is going to work then is the first talk will be on what are evolution and creation. Not necessarily from a theosophical point of view, but just the way society does look at what is evolution, what is creation. And the second talk will be the theosophical perspective on evolution and creation. So the beginning talk will be just basically what is evolution and what is creation, how they differ, if they are the same at all. So most people believe in one or the other, either evolution or creation. And if you talk to like even just a person on the street and ask them, do you have a belief in this? And then ask them why. Usually, what they're going to say, and usually this is from their heart, they want to know where they came from, what is life all about, and where did life come from? And it's a philosophical issue that, I mean, goes back to prehistoric times because even the prehistoric humans had some type of, not dogma per se, rituals when it comes to what they do believe. But currently, we're looking at there is a really big difference between evolution and creation. As we said, a lot of people think they're the same. But especially Darwin, because he was able to put so much into print in regards to evolution, the idea of evolution really came to the fore. And creation has become associated with religion and evolution with science. Yet theosophy would disagree with both, which is what this panel discussion today is all about. The church says that the soul of each man is a special creation with each birth. And it doesn't, and other than that, it doesn't say anything at all, no explanation about it, but just that, excuse us, the church saying that each soul is separate, that with each birth, it's not the same thing as it was before. But it is not specially created for each man, but experiences many incarnations in different bodies at different times. And that is just a little bit of what the theosophical idea is. Evolution being attached to science is the process which puts forth and explains the beginning of men and other living things. This process goes on from age to age, a process of coming forth or a development. So evolution is actually the change in the inheritable characteristics of biological populations over the course of generations. It occurs when evolutionary processes such as natural selection and genetic drift act on genetic variations and resulting in certain characteristics that become more or less common within a population over successive generations. So mainly we've heard this growing up, the survival of the fittest, that sort of thing, that if a certain species can't manage in the in the area in its environment, it will fade out. And we've all heard that growing up. The process of evolution has given rise to biodiversity at every level of biological organization. Scientists state that the present, this is where we really, it really differs from theosophy. Scientists state that the present race on Earth may belong to a common being, which back in time was rude and barbarous, aware of being little more than an animal. We are not given any idea as to what the church's idea was about this. And then there's this idea of evolutionism. It's a scientific theory explaining the diversity of life through natural selection and genetic variation over time. Creationism, which is a new term that's coming out recently, is intelligent design. And it is the belief that life and the universe were created by a supernatural being, which would be looked at as being the intelligent designer, which is an omnipotent and a benevolent God. Evolution, though, is the process by which different kinds of living organisms develop and diversify from earlier forms during the history of the Earth. The theory of evolution puts forth the idea that life on Earth evolved from one universal common ancestor about 3.8 billion years ago. It is a theory in the scientific sense of the word, which means it is supported by evidence and accepted by fact by the scientific community. Intelligent design, or creation, on the other hand, its hypothesis is not supported by any kind of evidence. Since 1929, the term creationism in the US has been associated then with Christian fundamentalism and specifically with a disbelief in evolution and a belief in a young Earth. Since creationism is a belief that a divine being created everything, one of the main attributes of creationism is the belief in a literal interpretation of religious texts, such as the Bible's account of the six-day creation. Creationists argue that the earth and all its inhabitants were created in a relatively short time, 7 days. We only, well, 6 days, and then seventh day, there was a day of rest. They also emphasize the idea of a special creation, which suggests that each species was individually created and did not evolve from a common ancestor. So we can see then that creation and evolution are two contrasting theories that attempt to explain the origins of life on Earth. Creation, then, as we know, is rooted in religious beliefs and posits that a divine being, such as God, created the universe and all living organisms in their present form, that there was no change over the course of time, that we were made the way we are now. It emphasizes the idea of a purposeful and intentional creation by a higher creator. On the other hand, evolution is a scientific theory that suggests life on Earth has evolved over billions of years through natural selection and genetic mutation. And we've read or we've heard of some type of species, one member was born with some kind of a mutation that actually made that member of the species able to live and perform better than his fellows. So that type of mutation would carry forward then. It proposes that all living organisms share a common ancestor and have gradually adapted and diversified to their current forms, while creationism relies on faith and religious texts. Evolution is based on the empirical evidence and scientific research. So, just one last thing we do want to explain is putting them side by side, creation and evolution. When we look at the origin of life, creation, as we said, we're just kind of summing things up. It was a lot of information. Life is creation, life created by a divine being, whereas with evolution, life was originated through natural processes. Creation occurred in a relatively short period. Evolution occurred over billions of years. Intelligent design, life forms intricately designed by a higher power for creation, whereas with evolution, life forms were shaped by natural selection and adaptation. Human origins, humans were created in creation in the image of a divine being, whereas evolution, humans evolved from earlier hominid species. So, if we're looking at practical application of these ideas, it's more of a mental acceptance or denial of how we want to believe in regards to creation and evolution. But there's a third idea, and that is what we're going to hear now, the theosophical idea of evolution and creation.
The fundamental principles of theosophy offer for consideration a grand prospect of a path of spiritual evolution. The enduring, hence real, inner man is a thinking, spiritual entity evolving over many lifetimes, each of which provides a different temporary body, bundle of personal attributes, and conditions for the acquirement of the experience necessary for spiritual growth. That growth leads to self-conscious realization of the one higher self of all, and the responsibility, power, and wisdom to raise the consciousness of beings in all departments of nature to the point of self-consciousness, and to raise humanity to the stature of self-conscious godhood. At this time of year, when we formulate and resolve to make ourselves better, to help and teach others, it is important to remember the teachings of Theosophy regarding our duty as creative spiritual beings, our responsibility for the use of our creative powers and our place in the greater evolutionary process going on around us physically, mentally, and spiritually. Human perfectibility and spiritual evolution are not religious sentiments or abstract philosophical ideals. They are facts in nature. There are human beings who have perfected their physical, mental, psychic, and spiritual natures to the highest possible degree. They are friends of humanity who continually watch over the progress of humanity and take the opportunities available under cyclic and karmic law to assist in that progress. The accumulated wisdom of the ages, which they know and preserve, is based on a central idea that one beginningless and endless, omnipresent, all-inclusive, unconditional reality is the source and cause of the universe and everything and being in it. Primordial substance, universal spirit, boundless, infinite, and eternal space, and ceaseless motion are the highest abstract ideal qualities the finite human mind can conceive of, that which is infinite. Yet this one reality is all of these and none of these. The universe is the periodical manifestation of this unknown, unmanifested, eternal, all-inclusive reality. The universe is not created out of nothing, nor is it the creation of a supreme being above, beyond, and separate from it. The universe is an emanation proceeding cyclically and in various stages from within, without, above, below, through a lawful process of evolution. Every temporary thing and being in the universe, in every department and kingdom of nature, partaking of and sustained by this eternal emanating spiritual material essence, is conscious and endowed with its own degree of consciousness, perception, and intelligence. This spiritual core of all beings is the enduring noumenal essence, as Plato would say, of all the fleeting and ever-changing phenomenal forms of being. The universe is worked, guided, created, if you will, in all its progressive emanating appearances and conditions from within outwards through the creative influences of these intelligent consciousness, conscious essences. We can understand this by correspondence and analogy. It is our evidence. Every external human motion is produced and created by an internal feeling, motion, emotion, volition, or thought, consciously or unconsciously. So too, the entire universe is guided, controlled, animated, intelligently designed by an almost endless series of hierarchies of sentient spiritual intelligences who are the emanations of and collectively the universal soul. They have taken part in the progressive evolution of human beings and have provided humanity with all its physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual faculties and instruments. They are the parents and progenitors of humanity, just as humanity is the manifestation of their creative powers. Although humanity may have lost awareness and recognition of this relationship with the divine due to the effects of causes set up by the misuse of the creative power of thought, humanity has been called the orphaned humanity, because of the loss of this spiritual knowledge. This is why such spiritual knowledge is considered to be the birthright of every human being and must be given freely, with no obligation imposed or implied to accept it. Accept that determined by the free will of every human being and their individual effort to check, test, and verify the truthfulness of these ideas for themselves. Every moment of life is an opportunity to create through thought and feeling present and future conditions that will assist the spiritual evolution of all beings. However, January 4th is a special time of year when the sun is closest to the earth and the astral life and energy of the earth are young and vibrant. It is a time of year particularly advantageous to those who desire to improve themselves and others by resolutions to make themselves better able to help and teach others. It is a time when one's higher aspirations have a more profound effect and can impress the mental and moral atmosphere that surrounds the earth and humanity with beneficial influences that work from within to elevate the heart and mind of humanity. Now is the season to recall the gift of spiritual wisdom that has been laid before us. Now is the opportunity, the best time of year, to rededicate our efforts to reclaim that knowledge for the benefit of ourselves and others. Now is the best time to create new conditions that will provide the opportunity for the evolving spiritual beings that we truly are to perform their rightful duty in the world. Unmute. Well, perhaps you have some questions or comments on creation or evolution, either from the scientific, the modern scientific, the doctrinal religious perspective, and of course, the theosophical ideas.
We have a question here in Theosophy Hall.
Are there any scientists that are working along theosophical lines and questioning some of Darwin's theories, which Darwin just called them theories? He didn't say they were fact, but they are accepted as fact by many.
We're not sure if there's any scientists working on a theosophical type of idea. Does my partner know?
Well, if we look at the camp representing intelligent design, And to qualify that, although it was stated there is no scientific evidence for the theory of intelligent design as put forth in the dogmas of religion, particularly Western religion, there is a lot of scientific evidence and proof that the theory of Darwinism is contradictory, incomplete, and cannot explain all the phenomena involved in evolution without acknowledging a intelligent design. So, although these scientists can argue against the acceptance of a theory of Darwinism and then by inference support intelligent design, they are not necessarily working to substantiate or prove the theosophical theory. Now, there are many, or there probably are individual scientists that we have read that do study aspects of it. For example, the creative power and influence of thought at a distance on material atoms. This work and the transfer power of thought across time and space. This work being done by Dean Radin, or Radin, Radin. And of course, there are the works of those who look for evidence of a design, what we would call an astral body, a field in which the organization of matter takes place. This is the so-called field theory in science, but also there are those who point to the existence of a biological field within which matter organizes it. And all these, if we would put together, make step-by-step approximations to the theosophical theory. The definite difference, though, the gap that currently remains, is for scientists to get away from the idea that everything can be explained on the random processes of natural selection and genetic mutation, and begin to look for and account for the origin of the intelligent force that seems to influence these processes. Because even scientists will recognize that the ability of the genetic expression to show itself forth in an individual depends on the interaction with the environment. And of course, that interaction depends on how we react to the environment as thinkers. So, this is an area that still requires more investigation.
We have a follow-up here.
No, actually, no, you covered it.
Oh, no. Okay. In the back. And
Well,
then.
this approach that's taken so far as creationism or evolution for the average modern day scientist person, there's so much about that everybody's just throwing these ideas and trying to construct theory or a philosophical framework, and everything is long, long ago and far, far away, and we think maybe this might be what it is. But wouldn't it make sense that the theosophical view, if everything that goes on in the cosmos, all the forces, the functions, the energies, and the principles of the cosmos are also inside the human being, then isn't there something within us that we can recognize and know about the evolution of the soul that we can then use to recognize the evolution of the universe generally?
That would certainly be the ideal, but we wonder though, most of the population are so focused on the physical form as it is that it seems as though most people are not willing to go inside, realize that we're spiritual beings, realize that everything else is conscious. So It would definitely be the ideal if people would think that. You have a follow-up on that?
Sure, but what, well, a sincere student of theosophy who makes the decision that he wants to find this out can investigate the theosophical teachings and compare and contrast what's going on within him so he can prove the truth of it to himself within him without having to think about what happened 10 billion years ago. What are some of the principles that theosophy teaches about the human being that we can apply universally as regards evolution?
Okay, so what is it that we can look at within ourselves that it can also be expressed in the cosmos? Well, we can look at ourselves as being more, if we look at ourselves as being a, if we're spiritual, if we realize that we have a soul. Not that we have a soul, that we are soul, that we know and can feel and understand that it is not an outside God that is explaining how we think and feel, that we know that we will come back, that we are making these choices so that it can. We can look at ourselves as being a universal, that all the lives that are in our bodies are also representative on a life, on an outside issue as well. I know that was kind of all around.
So to follow up with that, it was mentioned in the talk that the scientific theory is based on evidence. And of course, some of this evidence is gathered from research into processes that may have gone on a long time ago, and some of it is based on more current evidence. But the point is that these little bits of evidence are then extrapolated and expanded into a theory itself, which is hypothetical and only exists so long as the evidence approves of it. So that is why the scientific theories change over time, because every time there is a new discovery, it produces either an expansion of that theory or a revolution of the theory. And the theory of evolution of the scientists has gone through many such revolutions since it was first proposed by Darwin in the 1800s. And as a matter of fact, in Darwin's writings, he does point to an element of intelligent design, which had been completely ignored by those who popularized his scientific discoveries. So theosophy itself is based on science, but we might call it an occult science because its evidence is due to the perceptions of our inner faculties, our reason, our judgment, our intuition, our internal observation, and whatever is put out by the teachers for us to consider is only put out to the extent that we can discover within ourselves the correspondences, the evidences which allow us, like our modern scientists, expand to the recognition of the grander idea. And so, what were the fundamental principles of evolution and creation presented today about from theosophy? The idea of there being one source, which is eternal and is the origin of everything else that is changeable. And do we not see in ourselves a changeless aspect, which is the observer of everything else in our nature, which is changeable? And we can influence that changeable part while we remain the same. The second idea was that of the law of cause and effect and cycles. Do we not see that in every department of nature within ourselves? And the third great idea was that of evolution from within and out, within outward, through the expression and influence of intelligence. And do we not see in ourselves that every bit of progress we've made, whether it's been off ourselves and others, has not occurred unless it's through the determined choice, will, and effort and struggle of our own choices and our own free and an exertion, despite the influences in our nature and society which tend to pull us down or retard our progress. So we see within ourselves in miniature the clear evidence that doesn't change. It's a permanent aspect of our inner nature and can allow us to expand to the grander notion of evolution put forth by theosophy.
So we just wanted to add that when we, as was mentioned, the three fundamental propositions of theosophy, it is said that those ideas not only affect, especially the second fundamental being cycles, it affects not only the human and the animal kingdom, but cosmically as well. So the question that was asked about a similarity between the two, we can see, as was just said, that the three fundamental propositions can be expressed in all modes of life and experience and the cosmos. And we have a question here.
So then how do we contribute to the evolution or even the creation of a more harmonious world without being attached to the fruits of our labors?
So when we look at the Bhagavad Gita talks about that exact thing, about looking to the fruits of our labor, what we're encouraged to do is when our duty comes to us, we do it without expecting any type of reward. And this is how we can help. When we talk about universal brotherhood, which is expressed in the declaration, then by helping because it's something that needs to be done, then karmically we shouldn't do it because we're going to benefit our karma. We should do it because it is something that needs to be accomplished. And if we can focus on helping our fellow man, or the lower kingdoms, then, and if we're doing it so that without expecting anything, then karmically there is a benefit to us. If we do it expecting a reward, karmically there's a negative effect no matter what we do. If there's two people and one is doing one thing, doing it because it's for the good of all, not expecting anything in return, and another person does the exact same thing, but doing it because they want to be looked at as being a wonderful person, the one who's doing it for the all will karmically reap that reward, whereas the one who is doing it for themselves, their choices are being made and there will be a negative effect.
For the purposes of addressing that question, imagine, if you will, a spiritual, creative, intelligent being, immortal in its essence, because it is one with that absolute reality, a divine in its power and wisdom, because it is permeated and one with that absolute reality, and yet is obliged to gain more experience so that it can create a more self-conscious awareness of the implications and the fullness of that. And then imagine that this being independent of a body comes into a body and form. What possible experience, what possible offering or detraction by any other being could reward or add to that being that which they had already possessed in their inner nature? What praise, what criticism could one offer that being that would add to their stature or detract from it as a divine being? Nothing. The only thing that would matter to that being is that they would perform to the best of their ability their obligation of improving the circumstances around them for the benefit of all while they raise themselves in their own understanding. So that is, we might say, the basis from which we can try to apply that, to act for and as that self of all, recognizing that we are more than these physical bodies and personalities, and therefore we can act without expectation of reward, with the understanding that in our nature we are these eternal, creative, intelligent beings working through physical bodies and in physical conditions. JCS, you had your hand up before, did you?
Yeah, it was just a point of reference to support what one of the panelists said about science being an ongoing process. What commonly the American public thinks of the theory of evolution is actually a set of ideas promoted by Herbert Spencer. It was a Reader's Digest kind of presentation of the original research and thinking of Charles Darwin. And I think one of the panelists very appropriately pointed out that Darwin's original writings had an element of mysticism to them, whereas the Spencerian line of thought that has gone on to be accepted by the public does not. It's almost akin to there being Mahatmas, great souls who come periodically to teach a portion of humanity, and then the teachings are picked up, revised, and promoted by a different group of individuals. They're twisted in a certain way. But Herbert Spencer is a very interesting line of research to do in parallel to Charles Darwin's original work.
Thank you. We have a...
excuse me. So we're wondering if the split and the... and it varies, well, the whole way of thinking and approaching these ideas that scientists still, for the most part, are following the Aristotelian approach of going from particulars to universals, whereas his teacher, Plato, went from universals to particulars. And what theosophy tries to do is going from universals to particulars and then back. So we think that a lot of the Aristotelian thinkers, they jump to conclusions a little too quickly, going from a few particulars, and then they try to universalize it. But and then it sounds plausible, so the ideas take root. But occultism is a science, but it's something that we think very few people are really versed in at this point in our evolution.
Thank you.
Okay, we do have a chat, and that chat was the universe brought about by many gods instead of only one God? Are they called Dhyan Chohans? So the many gods referred to in this chat have many different expressions. In Hinduism, they're called Devas. In the Bible that we have, they're called the Elohim. That's in the Old Testament. We also have the idea of angels there, and also that brought forth into the New Testament. We have in the Kabbalah various emanations or Sephiroth. And of course, we have various expressions like that in other Eastern traditions as well as in the Persian traditions. But regardless of the name, they're referring to a hierarchy of collective intelligence directly involved in the creation. Because creation takes a definitive thinker working on a definitive plan and a particular substance producing a particular form, getting involved with the creation of that form. So they might be say are the direct creators. That absolute one reality is not the direct creator. It's too pure, too all-encompassing to have any kind of association or relationship or contact with something that is finite. And so we might say it's periodical representative, this universal soul, which then becomes the expression of all these different gods or intelligences, is the direct creator. We think. We might think is that absolute as the or the source of all, the ultimate rootless root of all, a causeless cause, just like everything is caused or evolved in space. And yet space does not net directly involve itself with the evolving or creation of any form that comes forth within it.
So we have a follow-up on that comment here in Theosophy Hall.
It's something different, but
Oh.
do we as soul beings and mind beings have, does the philosophy of Theosophy say anything about ourselves having anything to do with our own evolution in the past and designing and creating the forms that we are using now to work and with nature? Do we have any part in it, or are we just the recipients of these beings that designed us? Or is it both? It's a little of both.
Well, we also want to say in regards to that by the choices that we make, we are developing our forms from inward outward. That we make certain choices, it follows through on karma, and we will at some point in time. We develop when we look at the rounds and races, we know that. We started out ethereal, and we did want to add this to the previous question that there were emanations from the all. And the first logos was the universal oversoul. And from that point on, we can see how the Dhyan Chohans, those great beings, then were able to develop the form, but it started out in an ethereal way. And over the course of time, by the choices that the humans have made, we then began to become more and more substantive until we came down to what we have now. And eventually in this, Manvantara, or this stage of evolution, we will eventually go back to a more ethereal form. Does my partner want to comment on that?
Only to express it in a way that we could recognize it in our own experience. And that is that suppose we reached a point in our development where we realize that we have to move, either downsize or upsize or go laterally, but we have to move. The current dwelling we have is no longer of it, right? So we either choose one that previously exists or we have to make a new one for ourselves. So we have an idea of what we need in that new house, and we meet with an architect who meets with various contractors who can do the plumbing, the carpentry, the electrical work, and then the various people come along to do the inspections. And finally, we're ready to move in. So that house that we created, our physical body, in this case, that temple that we created, were we involved with it? Of course. Were other beings of different degrees of intelligence involved with it? Of course. But our direct involvement and inhabitants of that house, even though we were involved from the beginning, we don't directly move in until all the other beings involved have finished the product. And then we move in, and now it's our own to further develop and create as we see fit. And what will happen after a while, we'll need to move again. So take that idea, and as we move into the coming year, are we satisfied with the current house we live in? Our physical nature, our physical circumstances, our personalities, our aspirations, our thoughts? Do we want to move on? Hopefully, we don't want to move back. We don't want to downsize. But do we want to make ourselves, our dwellings, our instruments better? And so, this is the time, the best time, as we said, to do it because of the rising energies in our nature and in nature around us. So, thank you again for attending and participating. We will continue us along this line of the path of spiritual evolution next week.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.